This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasuthi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me, George. You're supposed to wish me before you even start anything.
I can't hear you. Guess what
you're
we're talking
mean,
about today?
You're mean today. Come on, wish me.
Well, happy International Women's Day.
Thank you, George.
Earlier on, I was told that every day should be celebrated as International Women's Day.
Yeah, that's what you all say, lah. Yeah. Whoever cares. You know, honestly, seriously.
Yeah, so if we care.
Are you not going to ask me why we don't have an International Man's Day?
I don't want to get into trouble.
Yes, right, okay.
Again, I said I can't hear you because we're talking about something very appropriate today.
Yes, it was the World Hearing Day on the 3rd of March. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whoever thinks about your hearing, right? I mean, unless you're affected by it, not many people want to talk about their hearing. We go get our eyes tested because, you know, it's a very obvious thing. You can't see very well. But nobody really cares about, you know, going for hearing tests unless there's something, you know, seriously wrong. So when was the last time you checked your hearing? I mean, do you know if you're at risk at hearing loss? I know I am. I'm in total denial because of the volume in which I listen to music in the car. You know, they've said never underestimate the power of loud music when you're driving.
In the car?
So, yeah, in the car.
Most people would imagine that it's like headphones or something.
Yes, and also, you know, whether or not it's an occupational hazard, because we sit with headphones on all the time, you know, constantly editing and doing work.
So you're the one in the ghetto blaster in the car zooming down NKVE,
right? Don't tell everybody that. George, come on. So, that's what we're talking about today. Your hearing, if you have a question for us, the number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or just tweet us at BFM Radio. But having, we have two experts in the studio with us to help us understand hearing loss today. Teshi Rao, she's a speech-language therapist, and Stephen Lee, who's an audiologist from the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing. Welcome to the show. How are both of you today?
Well.
Thank Hi, Meera. Thank you.
Yes. And, you know,
they look so nervous.
There they are. It's you, George. You do this to people like that. you know, Stephen, from the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing, I mean, are you seeing more and more Malaysians coming in with hearing problems?
Yes, that's a good question because it wasn't that much of attention in the past. But, you know, due to more usage of those personal devices, like that you just mentioned, more use of headphones and listening to louder and louder music, you know. So there's actually more and more patients with hearing loss, and it's actually moved down the age group, you know.
What's the age group you're seeing at the moment?
Well, previously we always say that hearing loss related to elderly, you know, those who are above 55 or 60s, but nowadays.
Hear that? Elderly above 55.
Yeah, you're not far from that.
Exactly.
Elderly bracket,
senior,
George.
Senior,
you're getting
exactly.
There, yeah.
I'm shocked. Right, okay. Right, sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's fine. So nowadays, it has actually moved down the age group where, you know, even teenagers or young adults, you know, in the 20s, actually, some of them do develop hearing loss and tinnitus because of exposure to loud sounds all the time.
Okay. So, and how do they know? I mean, are they coming in just to check because they can't hear, or what's going on?
Yeah, so usually they, you only go to see us when you have problem. That's what you mentioned before as well. So that's the same thing. So they only come when they started to notice like, oh, I can't hear well. Or it's like they keep on asking people to repeat, you know. So those are the first symptoms usually. And of course, some of them were affected by the tinnitus where they just hear ringing sounds in their ear all the time. So
I've always felt that that could be quite disruptive, isn't it?
Yes,
but you get used to it, most people say.
Pardon?
Most people say you get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, some people do able to get used to it or live with it, you know, making tinnitus as part of your life. But some people just can't because it's depressing to listen to some noise all day long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
beyond your control, isn't it?
Beyond the control, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that some people present themselves, you know, because they begin to realize that they're not really hearing properly, and people mention that. Do you get like spouses or parents actually bringing their kids or their spouse to see you?
Yeah, that's very common, you know, not everyone wanted to be in the clinic because they wanted to. Most of the time it's because their children can't hear them and they just force them into the clinic and do the hearing tests. And of course, some is just because, like, you know, the parents were saying, like, I have to shout, you know, in order for them to respond to me. So that's
all,
why.
All the wives kind of like,
ignore you.
Selective hearing loss.
Yeah, selecting hearing loss. Is that even real?
Yes. I'm sure it will. But how would you define hearing loss?
Hearing loss, basically, it's a loss of hearing sensitivity. It can be partial or total. So, you know, some people always say that when you can't hear, then you have hearing loss. No, that's not really true, because when you can't hear well, that itself can be a hearing loss. You might have a hearing loss that you can't hear well. So hearing loss is basically just a reduce of hearing sensitivity.
Okay.
Is there legal definitions of, like, how loss is considered a proper loss?
Yes, we have do have the defined level, or we call it the decibel level. So in Malaysia, we're using like 20 and below is normal. So when you're above 20, you're in the region of 20 to 40, you're saying you have mild hearing loss. Mm-hmm. When you're in the 40 or 70, you have moderate. 70 to 90 is severe. And above 90, you're just having profound hearing loss.
I mean, obviously those numbers don't mean a lot to the listeners. So can you give an example of what sort of like noise will be equate to those sort of decibels?
Okay, that's a good question. I always forget about
always ask good questions.
Ignore him.
All right.
Yes. So, selective hearing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So basically, normal conversation level is about 50 to 60. So
okay.
Our level is more or less 50 to 60 now. What we're doing now in a quiet environment, conversations, that's about 50 to 60. And if you are in like a concert, it can go up to 110 easily. Mm-hmm. And if it's a gunshot, it can go up to 140. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So how would it become dangerous, when the decibel become dangerous that might be threatening your hearing in long term?
Okay. So according to the OSHA definition is that when you're exposed to more than 85 decibels, and that's considered dangerous decibels.
Is it one-off or does it have to be continuous chronic exposure?
Oh, yeah. So it has to be exposed for at least 8 hours for 85. And then they actually have a calculation for it. So when it's 90, the duration reduced by half. And when it's 93, it's reduced by half again. So
can you elaborate that a little bit?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, so more than 85, it's dangerous.
Yes.
That's about 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
And how does that translate to a hearing loss?
How does that translate to hearing loss? So if you're exposed to 85 decibels for more than 8 hours, you started to develop hearing loss, where the noise itself actually started to damage your inner ear, you know. And so you will have a bit of loss, but it's kind of cumulative over time. Only you started to feel the impact. So it's like it's progressing over the time. So when you are exposed like 85 for 8 hours in the first time, you might not feel you have a hearing loss, actually. But you might only feel it after some time, after frequent exposure, and it's kind of cumulative and the effect will be pronounced.
Mm-hmm. What would be the typical scenario that will create 85 decibels of noise?
A typical one would be... the one we learn in textbooks is that those working in factories, for example. So if you are working besides the machines, you know, so you are of high risk, we call it. Mm-hmm. And also some other occupations that uses, like musicians, when they play a lot of music, so, and they are kind of at risk as well. Mm-hmm. And actually any other job occupations that when you're exposed to loud noises, but you do not use a protection device, so you are at risk, basically.
So loud noise is just one reason for hearing loss. There are other reasons as well. Mm. What is the most common that's most prevalent in Malaysia?
The most prevalent hearing loss. Contributed about hearing loss. Okay, so if we talk about just adults itself, then we have noise-induced hearing loss, which is very common. We have presbycusis, so basically it's a type of hearing loss due to aging. So when you age, you start to develop hearing loss. Okay. And of course, there is various infections that could cause hearing loss as well.
Such as?
Such as infections on the outer and middle ear. We call it the otitis. Otitis externa media.
You know, there's quite a few kind of famous celebrities always have, you know, hearing loss. Like Bill Clinton famously coped with hearing loss, and apparently is in the 70s playing a lot of music, loud music. And Whoopi Goldberg, I think, again, blame it on hearing loss like that. But in the older days, like Beethoven is famously one of those who can compose and then actually write in notebooks to communicate, because he reckoned he couldn't you know, hear properly. And Thomas Edison is another kind of like old days ones. So apart from noise, what else will be contributing towards somebody's hearing loss, like Beethoven and also Thomas Edison, for example?
See, he always does his research. I'm so proud of him today, actually. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not sure I know the answer, actually. Well, besides noise, right, you're talking about.
That's right.
So the second most common is actually aging.
Right.
You know, so, you know, like in the latest research by, you know, like the Johns Hopkins group, so they actually say that, you know, when you're at every increase of 5 years old after you're 60, the chances of developing hearing loss increase by 20%. Oh. So it's really pronounced.
Every actually. 5 years after the age of 60, or from the age of 60?
From the age of 60.
So 60, 65, it starts reducing by?
It just keeps doubling, increase of 20%.
Cumulatively.
Right.
Yes, the chances of getting hearing loss, yeah. So, and there's a lot of various causes, actually. It's kind of hard to kind of summarize all in a shot.
Yeah. I mean, there's some statistics quoting figures like 20% of all Americans have some degree of hearing loss. Do you think that is an exaggeration of some prevalence? Or do you think this is a sort of thing that we're seeing in Malaysia?
Actually, according to the market track, you know, so they did an investigations on about 13,000 people in the States, and actually the number was around 10.3 to 10.5% percentage of people who feel that they have hearing loss. So it's like a self-perceived type of hearing loss.
Okay.
So it's about 10.5 to 10.3, around that percentage.
In Malaysia, what sort of statistics are you quoting patients?
In Malaysia, so that's pretty hard at this moment. But we have the studies done by one of the professors in the UKM.
Uh-huh.
So she did on the elderly group, and actually they found that in Malaysia, the rate of people, you know, feeling they have hearing loss, it's actually pretty low. It's just about 2.7% when they actually really have some form of hearing loss.
Oh.
But only 2.7 reported they have hearing loss.
They're in denial. I know a lot of people who don't want to wear a hearing aid. You know, Shura, you're in the studio with us. You're a speech and language therapist. Are you seeing many people coming forward for help in this area because of hearing loss?
Most of the cases that I'm managing are pediatric cases. I don't see
adults.
As much adults, because usually, like Stephen said just now, usually adults, they won't perceive themselves as having hearing loss until it really becomes very significant.
Mm.
Almost, you know, usually
almost near total
severe
loss.
Profound, where they say they can't really understand speech, they have really obvious problem in communicating. So those are the cases, a few cases that I'm managing. So, but most of them, most of the patients that I'm dealing with is pediatric, and they were born with congenital severe profound hearing loss.
Right. Okay, let's talk about that, about the prevalence of hearing loss in children, and we'll go on to talk about the industry as well, as far as hearing loss is concerned. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. It's our Doctor in the House series. We're discussing hearing loss today. The 3rd of March was World Hearing Day. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in the studio with me, trying to, you know,
trying to work out whether I have hearing loss or not.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you said, Stephen said, from the age of 60, it starts to deteriorate. Whether or not is it a given that it deteriorates for everybody from the age of 60, Stephen?
Actually, not really. So it depends. There is no concrete evidence to say who will get and who won't. Mm-hmm. But that is just a general guideline. So it's kind of encourage people who's above 60 to have their hearing check, because you're at risk when you're above 60.
Okay. So Stephen Lee is an audiologist from Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing, and Tay Shi Rao, she's a speech language therapist, to help us understand. Now, let's move on to the children. We do know hearing loss in children is quite prevalent. Do we know why it is quite prevalent, and what are the risk factors?
The most common genetic factors of congenital sensory neural hearing loss, it's the connexin 26 mutation. Usually that counts for the congenital hearing loss.
Mm.
Yep. And also infections such as cytomegalovirus, rubella, but those factors are actually preventable. We have
vaccines to prevent people from getting that.
Okay. Correct.
Yeah. Okay. We have Anne on the line, and you have a question.
Hi. Okay. So my question is, I listen to music quite often, and sometimes I find that I raise the volume without realizing.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yep. How old are you, Anne? Can I ask?
I'm about 25.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So you want to know?
If you listen to BFM, you'll be fine.
Yeah, so I want to know how can I like make sure that I don't do it without realizing.
Okay. Thanks very much, Anne. And I know exactly what Anne is saying. Yeah. Once you reach a certain volume, you start to imagine it's not loud enough. And then you up it and you keep upping it. And this is exactly what happens to me in the car.
Okay.
So I know exactly what Anne is talking about. Stephen, so how do we make sure that doesn't happen?
And also, how do you know when is it dangerous or threatened to your hearing?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good questions from the audience, actually, from Anne. So basically, to test it out, you need to test the volume in a quiet environment. So let's take the car as a good example. So when you're at a car and when you're at the car porch area, so it's really quiet. So you should test out the volumes like at a comfortable level.
Okay.
And you can slowly raise it to a level that you feel that it's loud, but it's not uncomfortably loud.
Mm.
And you should set that as just like the maximum that you will go. And so that when you're in a noisy environment, let's say like you're caught in a traffic jam, you know, and you started to realize that, oh, the environment is pretty noisy, so you need to raise the volume a little. So you kind of know, you know, which levels, you know, it's kind of loud for you. And of course, there is a lot of built-in apps in the phone now that you can just install a sound level meter, and it's not 100% accurate, but it's kind of give you a rough idea on what's the decibels that you're listening to.
Really?
Okay.
So essentially, you can just measure the decibel itself in the car. For Anne, if she is downloading these apps and then trying to make sure that she's not really damaging her hearing for the next 30 years or so listening to a certain level, what level will be comfortably acceptable for her?
Well, as mentioned earlier, as long as it's not exceeding 85, you know, decibels, then we kind of say that it's fine, you know. You can listen to 80 dB for as long as you want and you won't get hearing loss.
I mean, this might sound like a stupid question, but would different type of music, like if classical music or rock music, will make any difference even when it comes to a decibel? And also, will putting on earphone or no earphone make any difference to your hearing?
Yes, actually. So, if you look into some, we call it dangerous decibels website. So basically, if you're listening to rock music, it tend to be much more higher in comparison to others because you need the ooms, you know, from listening
Absolutely.
To them.
I mean, classical music can be quite intense as well. Opera can be quite intense. So would it make any difference if they reach the same decibel, as far as volume concerned? Would it have a similar impact on your hearing?
Yes, it has a similar impact actually because hearing loss is caused by the sound energy itself. So as long as the orchestra, the high-pitched sounds, or is the rock that's more of the low-pitched sounds, as long as it reaches the energy itself, that it started to cause damage to the ear.
What about with or without headphone? Just listening on in the car, stereo or the headphone, would it make any difference?
Wow, I can imagine what the headphone is going to do to the ear.
Yeah.
How to measure?
Isn't it? It's quite hard for... We can measure it in the lab, you know, but for individual, I think it's going to be hard. But well, it's all boils down to the perceptions of loudness itself. It's very subjective, so it's better to get measured.
Yeah, I think to add on to, you know, our concern on noise-induced hearing loss, it actually depends on how often, how loud, and how long we're exposed to the sound. It's like we have a daily sound allowance. So if, like, let's say today we feel like we're, you know, we need
just
some rock music.
Yep. Yeah.
So let's say you're, if you're exposed to a loud sound for, like, you know, 1 hour a day, then for the rest of the day, you need to not listen to a lot of loud sound just to protect your hearing.
Well, okay. So that works.
Yes, that works.
To borrow from tomorrow,
you just have to
1 hour
you just have
today.
To tomorrow you can't listen.
The sound diet.
Yeah, so mirror
yes,
your
sound diet.
Yeah. So it's like a quota on a daily basis.
Yes.
As long as you don't exceed 8 hours, yes. According to the American guidelines, you should be all right with your hearings.
Yes.
Okay. If only we all. I noticed when we put your headphones on for both Stephen and Shiro, it was, they're like, no, it's too loud. And I'm like, bring it down.
Yes,
bring it
I think as hearing health professionals,
yeah.
and we're actually very conscious of that.
I yes. can imagine.
And myself, as someone who really loves Android music, uh-huh. I would also have the tendency to, you know, to crank up the volume of my music. And, you know, sometimes I would wonder if myself really have hearing loss.
Mm.
Very convenient to me because I can just go to the audiologist and do hearing tests.
Uh-huh.
So if you have any concern, because the theme of the World Hearing Day this year is to check your hearing. So the World Health Organization has actually come up with an app where you can actually screen your hearing,
mm-hmm.
and you can monitor your hearing from time to time. And at the end of the test, it will actually give you a score.
Mm-hmm.
To tell you if your hearing is good enough or if it's dropped, you need to, you know, when do you need to seek for help?
Yes.
When it drops, the hearing is affected. Can you fix it? Can you go on a sound diet and, you know, hopefully it comes back, you know, who knows?
No, unfortunately.
Once it's lost, it's lost.
Yes, at the current moment, if you have, like, we call it the sensory neural hearing loss, where their ear is damaged, mm-hmm. you know, and it's irreversible at the current technology itself.
I mean, can you, in a simple term, describe a little bit what exactly induces the loss? Is it the nerve that's being damaged permanently, or is it eardrum? Can you just elaborate like a little bit? What is the impact on the loud noise on the ear?
Okay, so there's a few mechanisms on how loud sounds can damage ears. So the first one is the most direct one. It's a mechanical force from the sound that is so intense, you know, that it makes the cells that are working in their ear kind of fatigue over time. So that's why they died afterwards.
They get tired,
exactly. So that's the most direct pathway. So there's other mechanisms as well. So such as, like, when you have loud sounds, it's kind of change the ionic content, you know, of the ear, that it causes the cells to die. That's one of the another common reason as well,
okay.
that I can think of.
I mean, apart from not listening to loud music, are there things that people can do to enhance their hearing, protect their hearings? You know, Malaysian or Asian always like to ask this question about any diet that can actually help you
know,
to enhance
it's like your eyesight, because we're all looking at screens today, and then mm-hmm. they recommend that every 20 minutes, stop, look far, you know, and then come back to it. You rest for about a couple of minutes and then you come back to the screen. So can you, what's,
is that applicable?
What, yeah, in, what about the hearing? Can we do anything about that?
Well,
eat
not
more
not
carrots.
That, yeah.
No.
not that I'm aware of. There might be, but I'm just, like, not very sure on
yeah,
that.
It's actually very precious, isn't it? Yeah. Don't we just take our hearing for granted, don't
indeed.
We?
Indeed.
Correct.
Yeah.
Shiro, I mean, based on the people you work with, what are some of their struggles?
Because I usually work with adults, with the pediatric.
Yeah.
When we work with parents on, you know, how should we adjust the way we speak to the child so that the sound will become more audible or more interesting to be heard by them? And how should we repeat certain words in a certain way so mm-hmm. that the child will be able to pick up that language? It can become very, very confusing for parents, because to them, children pick up language naturally. As someone with normal hearing, they learn language naturally, and they can't even describe or tell how they learn language as a child themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we often take for granted.
Yes. I mean, interesting, obviously, you're an expert working with children. First of all, for neonate or newborn, how do you know, or how do the parents know that there's hearing loss?
Well, maybe Stephen is the better person to answer that, but I'll start first. We have universal newborn hearing screening or newborn hearing screening to screen babies' hearing without having, you know, needing them to respond to us or tell us if they hear sound or not, because obviously baby can't do that.
At what age do you do that?
Newborn hearing screening. We do it, the encourage is after 48 hours after birth.
After birth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. And what exactly do you do?
So for newborn hearing screening, basically, it's a screening. So basically, we just use a tools, you know, like we call it OAE, you know, in order to measure the response that coming from the ear by just introducing some sounds and measure the reflecting sounds.
And you're looking at the baby's response.
Reaction.
Not really. It's an objective test. So basically, you know, when you do the measurements, there will be some reading coming out from the machines that tells you, that give you an indications whether it's pass or fail.
Okay, but and everybody gets screened?
No, unfortunately. So currently there's only, like up to 2016, there's, if we look at the Ministry of Health itself, there's only about 15 hospitals that provide universal newborn hearing screening, meaning all babies born were screened in those hospitals, but the other majority hospitals are actually doing high-risk screening. So they only screen the baby that's at risk. For example, a baby who has to admitted to the NICU, the intensive care unit, then they will be screened. But otherwise, no.
I still don't understand. How are you measuring whether the baby can hear or not?
All right. So,
because if you're not looking for a reaction, then how do you know the child is actually hearing?
Okay. Oh, well, it's a clever test where the machines, the device itself, they will introduce some sounds into the ear, you know, and when sounds goes in, there are sounds that's bounced back.
I see.
Yeah. So we measure the sounds that's bounced back.
That's that's really quite amazing. Funny. Yeah.
And what sort of pickup rate do you have for, let's say, your unit in UKM where you do universal 48 hours post birth screening? And what sort of diseases are you picking up?
So basically, the screening is just going to tell you whether you pass or fail in terms of hearing. So it's not going to tell others.
Anything in between. So it's either you hear or you don't.
Yeah.
Because sometimes some children are born with 20% hearing and 40% hearing.
Exactly.
So that won't be picked up at that stage.
So there is a rate, there's a chance that might miss. But usually the test itself, it's pretty sensitive, up to, we say, like 25 to 35 dB loss. So, I mean, like, if you use 20 is normal. So if you have hearing, if you have very mild hearing loss, you might miss the test.
Uh-huh.
You might get a pass, you know, we call it false positive. But if you have like more than mild hearing loss, the test will definitely pick it up.
Let's talk about cochlear implants. They seem to be quite, everyone seems to be talking about it now, especially for children.
Mm.
But they recommend that a cochlear implant is actually, is implanted when the children are young. And there's been just a recent study to show that infants receiving cochlear implants are more likely to speak than sign. You want to tell us a bit more about that, Shiro, I apologize.
It's okay.
It's my hearing or whatever. Okay, go ahead.
Usually, when parents come in with a child with newly diagnosed profound sensory neural hearing loss, their first question is, will my child be able to talk? Because the common beliefs or knowledge about deaf or, you know, not being able to hear is sign language. You won't be able to talk.
Right.
But so my answer to that question is your child will be able to talk if the child receives early intervention with appropriate hearing devices. When I say appropriate, it means the device will help the child's brain, auditory brain, to have access to all sounds that the brain needed in order to develop spoken language.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the child needs a parent or at least a family who is supportive to help them to develop spoken language. So supportive means parents have to learn strategies to communicate with their child, to adjust the way they talk to the child, so that they will be able to pick up language.
Oh, essentially what you're saying is that make the diagnosis early and intervene early in a multidisciplinary, multi-approach empowerment to the parents.
Okay? Yes.
And how successful was something like that? I mean, cochlear implant sounds quite high-tech. And I think, would you like to elaborate a little bit about that?
What is a cochlear implant?
Yeah. So let me answer that question. So cochlear implants, basically it's an electrode that's surgically implanted into the cochlear, which is the inner ear of a human. So what it does is that when we use our normal ear, we listen to sound or acoustic energy, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of sound. But when you have a cochlear implant, you are listening to electric impulses. So what it does is that the processor outside, the microphone outside, will pick up the sounds, they will convert it into electric signals, and it will be transferred or transmitted through the electrodes to stimulate your nerve, your mm-hmm. hearing nerve itself.
Okay. And what age?
At what age?
So the younger, the better?
Absolutely. I mean, because if you look at abroad, because of the successful of universal newborn hearing screening, most babies' hearing loss will be diagnosed at 3 months old.
Okay. Wow, that's fantastic.
And yes. Actually, the golden rule is, you know, all babies born, their hearing should be screened by the age of 1 month. Uh-huh. And if it's failed, they should get a full hearing diagnosis by the age of 3 months.
Uh-huh.
And their hearing loss should be intervened latest by 6 months.
By 6 months.
And those babies who receive early intervention according to 1-3-6 rules,
yes,
they have the highest chance to achieve age-appropriate language.
Right, okay. And at what age, after 1-3-6, at what interval do you start thinking about cochlear implant?
Well, if cochlear implant is warranted, usually based on the hearing diagnosis, if it's severe to profound, where hearing aids can't really help the child to have full access to sound spectrum, cochlear implant will be warranted. It depends. Usually, if it's in the States, the FDA approval is for babies to receive implantation as early as they're 1 year old.
Uh-huh.
But in Malaysia, our earliest implant, at least in UKM, is 10 months old babies.
Okay.
And in Australia, some of them are actually earlier than that.
Mm. Okay. But it doesn't mean that a cochlear implant is going to fix the hearing loss.
Correct.
For some people, it won't.
That is, it's not going to, cochlear implant would definitely help patient with severe to profound hearing loss to have better access to sound.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not mean that someone with severe profound hearing loss will be able to develop spoken language, because it really depends on the age
and severity of the loss from birth.
Well, it's already severe profound.
It's already severe,
yes,
profound.
Yes, so
okay.
With a cochlear implant, they will be able to hear softer sound, but it doesn't mean they will be able to talk, because it all goes back to the brain. Because we're now, you know, when we talk to parents about why therapy is important after a cochlear implant, even though the child can hear, we can't expect them to talk right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because hearing loss is actually not a problem with the ear, but it's a problem with the brain. When we have a hearing loss, it's like the doorway for sound to enter the brain is blocked.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the function of the hearing devices is for the sound to go into the brain, and brain is actually our real ear.
Mm-hmm.
That is why when sound stimulation, like through cochlear implants, it's electrical stimulation.
Right.
Brain has to learn to organize itself around the speech signals.
Okay. And at what point do you come in, and how do you see this child through into adulthood?
We'll come back and find out more up next. If you have a question for either one of them, Stephen or Shiro, just give us a call, 0377 332 900. You can WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. If you've just joined us, it's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in the studio with
Completely
me.
Completely amazed.
We're talking about hearing loss. Yes, it was World Hearing Day on the 3rd of March. And joining us also, Tay Shee Roh. She's a speech-language therapist. And Stephen Lee, who's an audiologist from the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing, which is going through, you know, adults, children, you know, when it comes to hearing loss. And of course, the main problem being loud music habits today, which is of huge concern. And Stephen has gone through some of the decibels that you should be listening to. More than 85 is dangerous. That is the golden rule. And mm-hmm. there's an app now to actually sort of measure that decibel if you are in the car, for an example. As for the headphones, we don't have anything as yet, but it's interesting that keep hearing out for the 85, more than 85 decibels. Let's, you know, George, you had a question just now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mistake. Obviously, UKM, you guys involved in the cochlear implant program, universal screening. at what stage after the implant do you take over, and how do you see the child into teenage years and adulthood?
So your question is, you know, at what stage that I will come in?
And how do you play your role?
Yep. I would say I actually come in quite early in the picture. Mm-hmm. As long as the child is diagnosed with hearing loss, okay, even before they're fitted with hearing devices.
Okay.
We work in a multidisciplinary team. So when a child first diagnosed, it's usually by the audiologist, and then they subsequently be referred to the ENT, and then they will be referring to the speech-language pathologist as well at the same time. Our role is actually to help parents to see the child as, you know, not as a child with hearing loss. Because most of the time when a parent know that the child can't hear when they talk, they would, you know, they would forgot how to communicate with their babies. Mm. While actually at the same time, babies actually has a lot of nonverbal communication. They crave for the adult's face. They want adult to interact with them non-verbally. I think our role is to maintain that parent and baby bonding.
Okay.
So that parents know to appreciate their child, and actually, you know, with early intervention, they will be able to pick up naturally and they will develop spoken language. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a sign, right? Yeah. Let's move on to the elderly. I mean, hearing loss, mm-hmm, as you said, from the age of 60 or so starts to decline. I mean, it starts to kick in. What if you don't address it?
Oh, what?
Because as you said, you know, in older age, everyone's in denial. They don't really want, you know, nobody wants to wear a hearing aid.
Mm. Is that true? Is that a stigma?
Yes, it is. It feels like a disability, you know. And even for children going to school, they try and avoid, you know, figuring out ways in which the, you know, the hearing aid isn't quite
talking
visible.
Talking about stigma in children,
yeah,
we have some very encouraging examples from our caseloads. Some of the parents, you know, it's very normal. You know, they know that the child will be growing up with a big device
hearing
behind
aid,
their ear, yeah, cochlear implant. And there's one parent that we work with, the mother say from young she wanted the child to get used, mm-hmm, with this stigma. So she chose the bright colour hearing aid, mm-hmm, or cochlear implant. She wanted to invite gazers, send questions, and she get the chance, she took the opportunity to model to the child, how should you address or explain to people when they ask you these questions, because it should be as normal as you're wearing
glasses. Yeah.
If you can't see clearly, mm-hmm, you wear glasses. If you, yeah, can't hear, then you wear hearing aids.
Which is true.
Trendy ones.
Correct. Exactly. Yes.
Did it work?
That's quite.
Definitely. So yeah, this child is a very confident boy in normal school.
Okay.
And he advocates for the other children with hearing loss as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's talk about the older people.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So the older people, so back to the study that I mentioned earlier. So they actually investigated on 301 elderly in the Selangor state of Malaysia. So they found that the adoption rate of hearing aid is about 7.3%, mm-hmm, among those with significant hearing loss. So it's pretty low, but well, if we were to look at a bigger picture globally, so in the US, the adoption rate is about 30.2, mm, whereas in countries like Australia and Taiwan, they're more than like 18.4, whereas in China is about 6.5, and in, mm-hmm, India is about 1.5%.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Could it be 1.5. Like the disparity due to economic reasons? Is it because of cost?
Yes, that's a very good question, because that's a question that I always get, like, how much is the hearing aid cost?
Okay.
And I would say it's not that cheap, you know. So basically, a hearing aid costs at least like a 2,000 and above for you know, the entry levels. And if you need a really good one, it can cost more than 10,000 for one hearing aid.
So there's a Proton and there's a Rolls Royce of the hearing aid.
Does the government system pay for hearing aids?
Yeah.
So for government servants, they can apply the funding through JPA, where, you know, we'll be able to provide like the free hearing aids through the JPA if you're a government servant. If you are not, then it will be pretty tricky, mm-hmm, in the sense that we have on and off funding from, you know, some NGOs and some, you know, like raise fund through the media, you know, and things. But there's It's not like a national funded program like the developed country itself.
So cost is a problem, is a barrier.
Cost is a barrier, yes, okay. Exactly.
And what happens if you don't get enough help when it comes to your hearing? Because I know I had an uncle and aunt, and I would just be so amused sitting at the back of the car while they would, you know, husband would drive and she would sit next to him and both talking about entirely different things because they couldn't hear very well.
Maybe but, they choose to do so.
But, you know, they refuse to get a hearing aid because of, you know, pride and like some people who don't wear glasses because, you know, it's not, they're very vain now.
Yeah,
they,
it's admissions of age,
yes,
aging.
Exactly, yeah.
I will, and that's a good question because there's a recent findings publication in 2019 itself that shows that, you know, actually, you know, in among elderly, if their hearing loss goes unmanaged, it affects the spouse relationships, actually.
Makes it better?
Oh, no,
oh,
definitely
George,
not.
Come on.
Okay, right, sorry.
Yes, okay. So, you know, just imagine if you have a hearing loss and your wife was saying, I love you, and you reply,
or
what
the
did you
way
say?
Around.
Yeah, you say, what did you say?
And well, I hate you, I don't hear that.
He just won't respond because he didn't hear it.
That's yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So that kills the mood, you know, and you know, and that's a lot of things like, you know, being, you have to be your spouse's ear, for example, so when they go out, if you have hearing loss, you know, you go out and
your must wife, be frustrating in a relationship like that. I mean, it must be frustrating with, you know, family members with having that situation. If somebody chooses not to have hearing aid, and are there any other surgical intervention that can correct this in a more permanent basis?
Like you have LASIK for your eyesight.
That's right.
Unfortunately, again, there's no this miracle pills yet available because even when I was doing my master in UK, so they're not there. We are not there yet in general. The hearing signs, we are unable to regenerate the hair cells. We're unable to have a device that can, you know, heal everything. So we're just not
so,
quite.
So
there
is there
yet.
Anything kind of in the horizon that potentially may be exciting for listeners out there who don't really enjoy wearing hearing aids?
Oh, I don't think I have solutions yet because since we can't, you know, heal the hair cells itself, so basically it's an irreversible condition. So it's
perhaps
just
an area that needs a lot of research.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that a lot of research hasn't really gone into it. Investment R&D, maybe it might now, knowing that our listening habits on headphones, our loud music habits could possibly be a hazard going forward.
And about, affecting so many people.
Yes, and even getting younger and younger. What about hearing loss and dementia? Is there a connection?
That was a pretty new hot topic in the hearing science world itself. So basically they were saying, like, if you have hearing loss, your chances just increase. So let's say if you have they actually have a figure for it. If you have mild hearing loss, you know, your chance might be like higher, one times higher than the people with normal loss. Mm-hmm. But if you have moderate loss, your chances of getting hearing dementia is three times higher than people with normal hearing. And if you have severe to profound loss, your chance of getting dementia is actually five times. Mm-hmm. Although it's not like an exact causal relationship research, but it was done on like, at least it was a longitudinal population big study in the US, so it was quite convincing.
Sure. The PERCA B40 government exercise will actually cover medical devices aid for those aged 50 and above and are currently receiving Bantuan Sarahidup. So the medical devices aid covers hearing aids. Am I correct?
Oh. I'm not aware of that, actually.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. So it does cover hearing aids. So there is some hope. I mean, government is recognising it, obviously, that it is a problem going forward. Sort of running out of time, would you have a message for us on this World Hearing Day?
All right. So to everyone, like, our hearing, you know, having a hearing loss, it's a pain in life, you know. So it's really important to take care of your hearing, you know, don't mess it up. You know, most of the times hearing loss is through habits, you know, in the daily life. If you could curb those, then God bless you, your hearing will be fine.
Mm-hmm. Chiro?
Yeah, referring to the World Hearing Day theme, which is check your hearing. So remember to monitor your hearing from time to time because it can actually occur without you realizing. It's so gradual and so subtle. So it's important to monitor your hearing, like how you should do your annual body checkup.
Mm-hmm. To go to an audiologist and get it done.
Yep.
Okay. The Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing, do you carry out tests there?
Well, Malaysian AMASH does not carry out tests, but our members does a lot of this hearing awareness programs, whether it's through AMASH or through any like audiologist national association as well. So the members actually do a lot of hearing awareness program, especially in coming out in May when it's Better Hearing and Speech Month.
Oh, Better Hearing and Speech Month. Okay, yeah. There's another one in May. Fantastic. I think we need more awareness. Exactly. George, your message.
You know, on that note, we're on the same frequency, and then therefore, I think I'm, you know, approaching age of 55, I'm going to get my ear hearing checked now.
What? Do it now, George. You're going to be 50. Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was Tay Shiro, a speech language therapist, and Stephen Lee, an audiologist from the Malaysian Association of Speech and Hearing, speaking to us about this World Hearing Day and some of the issues faced by us as far as our hearing is concerned, together with Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.